afternoon. The time is 12:07. You're tuned to Midday Matters on WBOY Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beter. Very glad to be with you on this Monday afternoon. With me, as usual, it's Bob Keeler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. Bob, welcome to the program.
Hi, Sean. Good to be here.
And we appreciate you, our listeners, being with us this well on this edition of Midday Matters. We're going to be talking about the recent news we heard from Ball State that the university would be revoking the charters of 7 charter schools around the state, 2 of which are in Fort Wayne. Joining us for the hour, we have a few special guests with us. On the phone, it's Kyle Stokes, our education reporter from State Impact Indiana. Kyle, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you. It's good to be with you, Sean.
Welcome to the program, Kyle. Thanks very much for being here.
Yeah, no problem.
With us in the studio as well, we have Rochelle Spearman, principal at Imagine School Broadway. Ms. Spearman, thank you very much for being with us on the program today.
Hi, Sean. Thank you for having me.
And, of course, we want our listeners to join in the conversation today. If you have a question or comment for our panelists, the number is 260-452-1185 or toll-free at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. And we want to hear specifically today from those folks who have a stake in these schools. If your child goes to one of the schools that are potentially being shut down, if you have a child in a charter school anywhere in our listening area, we'd love to hear from you today. Kyle Stokes, I want to start with you in this discussion. For folks who haven't been following this story, can you help bring us up to speed here?
Yeah, absolutely. I think as a preface to this conversation, it's important to just note for absolute complete understanding across the board about what a charter school is and how it's different from a public school.
Sure.
And in a nutshell, a charter school is a public school that operates with public dollars. They're financed a little bit differently, but I think in a nutshell, what makes them different is that they are freed from a lot of the same regulatory burdens that that traditional public schools and traditional public school districts have to fulfill. Still, the trade-off there is that they're with this freedom, they are required to meet very stringent standards of accountability. They have to make good test score gains year over year, and they also oftentimes have to post enrollment gains as well. And so with this in mind, Ball State University, which is one of the entities that oversees these schools, decided to not renew 7 of the charter schools that they oversee, which is a huge number. They also, there were 2 other charter schools that were up for renewal that withdrew their application, so 9 in total that are likely to close after this year, barring their accepting of an appeal. So this decision was handed down in late January, and I should stress this is historic in terms of the number of schools that's closing. 7 schools is 10% of the state's charter school portfolio. It's about a quarter of the schools that Ball State oversees. So and we've never had this many charter schools close all at once. This is a first in the about decade-long history of charter schools here in Indiana.
Rochelle Spearman, tell us where your story and the story of Imagine School on Broadway picks up here.
Well, we opened in 2008-2009. We took the I-STEP assessment 2 times our first year because they were transitioning at the state level from having students take it in the fall to spring. When we took the first assessment in the fall, we were at 23.4% passing. And so that means those are the students that we took in and we hadn't even had a month of instruction with them. So basically, the accountability for that is across the board from the schools that those students came from. Over the past 4 years and now we're in our 5th year, we've definitely grown, but according to Ball State, not enough. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of our story in short. We've definitely put many measures in place to ensure that kids are growing at the rate they need to grow. And at the end of the day, the question is, how long do you give children the opportunity to grow when you have all the essential academic measures in place. I've been with the school since we opened. I started off as a third grade teacher. And so I've been able to see us evolve and have a lot of confidence in what we're doing. No, you know, our numbers are not impressive yet. We really believe this fifth year is a turnaround year for us in terms of, you know, getting to that place academically where we need to be. So I guess our story is we're really wanting Ball State to consider our data from this year. Mm-hmm. And then go from there mm-hmm. in terms of making a final decision. So we're hoping that our appeal process, we're hoping that it will be promising mm-hmm. And that we can definitely argue our case even the more. So we'll see what happens.
Have you heard any preliminary reaction from Ball State in terms of the appeal process or your appeal specifically?
Actually, just today, received an email stating that they have now selected a hearing officer for the hearing. Her first name is Melissa, and I believe I would mess up her last name, but I can email that to you. And currently, they have asked panelists to be a part of the process, and they're awaiting acceptance from those panelist members, and then they'll be able to reveal who those individuals will be. So it's in the work. So,
can you talk a little more specifically about what data you'll be presenting to those panelists?
Yes.
Ball State says there hasn't been enough growth. It's time. Mm-hmm. It's time to discontinue the project. Basically, mm-hmm. What's your argument to them?
Well, let me start with their visits and our conversations with them that we've had, especially this year, because this year is the first time they've really come into our building with purposes of academic accountability and seeing the things that we're doing and having those tough discussions with us. In the past, we've had, you know, visits at our board meetings and, you know, surface level things. So this year, it was said in the media that we shouldn't have been surprised about the decision, and we absolutely were surprised. We have a new academic framework in place this year, and basically it's building on the things that we've been doing the past years, but we're doing more of it and looking more at data. We've been able to share that with them multiple times this year, and they've been very complimentary of the things that we're doing. And we've also been emailing them data every month. We have monthly units, and so we're showing our kids mastery growth every month. One of the things we're using is the acuity assessment, which is a state assessment that is in line with ISTEP, the most in line with ISTEP that there is that we know of. And we have shown significant improvements on that. We've taken acuity A, B, and C, the predictive measure. And right now we're looking at becoming a C school with just taking those three assessments. Mm-hmm. And so
A C school on the overall
going from
state,
an F to a C. Mm-hmm. Yes. Looking at the growth, high growth and low growth students, and then also proficiency at the third grade level. So we're looking at a C right now, and with a more intense focus on a certain group of kids, we could also be looking at a potential B. So that's the type of growth that we've seen already this year, and that's information that we have shared with them. So we're going to probably highlight that even more in the appeal hearing and go from there.
We're talking during this program with Rochelle Spearman, principal at Imagine Schools on Broadway, and Kyle Stokes, education reporter for the State Impact Indiana Project. Bob Kaler.
What are some examples of things that you've, of ways that you've capitalized on having fewer restrictions and requirements than an ordinary public school does? What's different about Imagine?
Well, I would first of all say it doesn't feel like we have fewer requirements and less restrictions. We are not only held accountable to all the state rules and regulations. There may be some that we're not, and the ones that we adhere to are clearly listed on the DOE side and other places. But we also are accountable to Imagine and accountable to Ball State. So we have three points of accountability, which I think was mentioned at first, that we definitely have more stringent regulations and rules I feel that we have to adhere to. The difference, I think, is our six measures of excellence would be one of the differences. So we're not only looking at academics in terms of the whole child. We're looking at economics. We're looking at character. We're looking at new school development, meaning that we are doing the best things for kids. and that parents are happy with what we're doing, with them being the ones that know their students best. We also look at economics and make sure that we're sustaining ourselves. So we look at more than just academics, and definitely more than just test scores when it comes to students. So,
how do you have a clear sense from Ball State of what an acceptable rate of ISTEP achievement is for you, or has Ball State said there isn't a magic threshold? It's part of the mix.
I think it's part of a mix. Okay. Is probably closer to the answer. If you look at the schools that were up for renewal and then were not renewed, I think that it's very easy to see how the schools that were not renewed are kind of looking at this and saying, what's the pattern here? Where did we fall short? There are schools that received renewals from Ball State, in fact, long-term renewals from Ball State. One that I can think of got three straight Fs. And they were renewed. I think that it's important point to mention here that this isn't all about test scores, and the magic threshold is something that involves a lot more than just what's your ISTEP score, what was your letter grade from the state. What Ball State says is that they're looking at the charter itself, and the charter document spells out promises that that the school leaders make either at the founding of the school or upon renewal of the charter, that basically says we will meet these goals. And those goals oftentimes intersect with test scores and with things like enrollment gains and your state letter grade. But it goes beneath that as well. I mean, as Ms. Spearman is talking about, Ball State has information about other assessments that they're doing throughout the year that teachers give to their students to kind of benchmark, okay, where is this student right now and how is he or she likely to score on the ISTEP later? Ball State has all of that information. And so I've not gotten a very clear answer about what the threshold is, because there's data involved in this for sure. It's not clear to me where the threshold is. Ball State says that it is more than test scores and letter grades. It's just not immediately clear to me exactly where that threshold is, and I think that that's left a huge information gap, at least between me and Ball State, and I think it's fair to say between the schools and Ball State,
yes,
who say
absolutely.
we've put everything out there, and this is the result.
Rochelle Spearman, you're nodding there.
I am. It's definitely unclear. We're definitely looking to learn more at the hearing, but I will speak to what was mentioned about the promises made in the beginning. Sure, I believe even in our charter it says we will be at 90% proficiency or something. Obviously, when you're opening a school, there are some unknown factors, and kids make a big difference. When they come in your doors, their starting point makes a big difference, and how long you need with them to, you know, catch them up when they're behind, you know, 2-3 grade levels starting off. So definitely, yes, there were some promises made in our charter contract at the beginning that we haven't followed through with, but there are so many different factors that go into play. And we're looking for an authorizer, especially Ball State at this point, to look at the whole story. Look at us and consider us, consider the whole picture. And for us, we haven't gotten any idea if it's more than just test scores. I don't believe that it is for our campus specifically, but maybe across the board in general, that's a safe statement. Our focus has been academics in terms of our conversations with them and our visits with them. So
you're saying, let me, I guess, clarify. You're saying you don't think Ball State's looking at much more than ISTEP scores
I believe
right
they
now?
May be looking at more, maybe, but they haven't posed anything else as an issue with us in terms of our school specifically. So,
Kyle Stokes, did you want to jump in there?
Yeah, I think that it's important to pick up at this point that if Ball State, and I'm not saying that they are, but if Ball State were to look at nothing but test scores in the state letter grade, I'm not sure that that's a methodology that necessarily charter school advocates would accept. And I'm not trying to imply that. But the point that I do think it's important to make here is that if that was all that Ball State was looking at, I think it would be enough validation for charter school advocates to say that Ball State is acting in the best interest of kids here. And I think that that's something that I've heard from from a lot of charter advocates as I've asked around. In fact, they say so quite enthusiastically and without much hesitancy that authorizers must act swiftly and decisively when they feel that a school is underperforming. Now, again, I don't want to say that they're only looking at ISTEP scores. They're clearly, I mean, they've stressed to me that they're not. And I think that the schools do not necessarily feel, because what I'm hearing from Ms. Spearman, I've heard from the leaders over at Timothy L. Johnson Academy, as well as from charter leaders across in other parts of the state. It's just important to note that what charter school operators would say is that, yes, we know there are other factors, but there are other schools that are meeting their goals despite all of the unknowns and the intangibles that walk in the door every day. And I think that it's important to make sure that point of view of what charter school advocates in Ball State officials would kind of advocate, just understand where they stand there.
We're talking today about charter schools and the recent news that Ball State University would be revoking the charters of several schools across the state, including right here in Fort Wayne. We do need to take a quick break. In the meantime, we hope you'll get in touch with us if you have a child at a charter school. What's your take? Or if you'd like to offer up a question or comment to our panelists, 260-452-1185 or toll free at 800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. It's @middayitmatters. Stay with us. The conversation continues in 2 minutes.
The legendary Boston criminal Whitey Bulger, who inspired Jack Nicholson's character in the film The Departed, was wanted for 19 murders when he was captured after 16 years on the lam. While pursuing his criminal career, Bulger was informing, too, and getting protection from the FBI. On the next Fresh Air, two journalists who've covered his story. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
This week on American Roots, we're riding the rivers and rails and words and music, including a visit with Captain Doc Hawley, a calliope player on the Natchez Riverboat, and with songmaker and train lover Justin Towns Earl, plus songs about steamboats, rail cars, and their riders. I'm Nick Spitzer. Join me for American Roots from PRX.
Monday night at 7 on WBOI.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Indiana Tech Law School, opening in Fort Wayne, August 2013. Information on admissions and curriculum online at indianatech.edu/law or 855-TECH-LAW.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Goodwill Industries of Northeast Indiana, helping people with disabilities and employment barriers find and keep jobs, accepting donated items at 9 stores and area collection bins. Details at fwgoodwill.org.
Good afternoon, 12:25. This is WBOI Fort Wayne. I'm Sean Beter, along with Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. With us by phone this hour, it's Kyle Stokes from our State Impact Indiana project covering education. Kyle, we appreciate you being with us this hour. Also with us in studio, Rochelle Spearman, principal of Imagine School on Broadway. We're talking this hour, of course, about charter schools in our listening area. In the shadow of the news that Ball State University recently announced it would be revoking several charters for schools around the state of Indiana. We want your take on this. If you have a child at a charter school in our listening area, weigh in. We'd love to hear from you. 260-452-1185 or 800 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. Rochelle Spearman, I'm sorry we had to go to break before we could let you respond to Kyle. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Sure. He was talking about advocates and what most would say concerning charter schools and how the school leaders share different sentiments at this point, which is absolutely right. I would just say this, as a leader of our school and as someone that's been there the entire time of our existence, our goal is not to make excuses. Obviously, other schools are doing great things, and it's, you know, showing in terms of their academics. And how long those schools have been in existence, I mean, definitely we could do more research and figure out, okay, well, who turned it around in 1 year and who took 10 years to do it. For our campus, we didn't have a magic bullet, you know, starting off. And so definitely there's a learning curve. And I guess some would say, well, we don't want our kids to suffer because, you know, you're learning what to do. But kids make a difference. And when you're learning who those individuals are and what they need to get them where they are, and when you're as transient as us, I would definitely say I don't have regrets about how long it's taking us. I feel like we're a school that has all the essentials. And I guess any other school leader might share the same sentiments as I. But if you're in the trenches every day and you're working with these students and you know you're doing the best things for them, to hear that statement from outsiders that say it's not best for students definitely hits home. Mm-hmm. And it's very hurtful to hear that. I completely disagree with that. So I just would say anyone that's an advocate for our school, charters in general, that is on the outside looking in, maybe get to know our school a little more, maybe come visit, maybe learn more information before making those judgments from the outside looking in.
Could you talk a little bit about the makeup of the student body at Imagine Schools on Broadway? Who, if there is such a thing, who is the typical student who comes comes to your school?
We definitely are very diverse. Some may think that we're majority African-American, but we're not. We're probably, and I do not have the exact numbers, but in terms of the breakdown between multiracial Hispanic students, white students, and Black students, we're sitting about, you know, in the 20 percentile on average with those groups. And then we have our other that kind of make up the rest. So, definitely a melting pot of different students. So. Mm-hmm.
Is it too bold to say that many students at Imagine Schools on Broadway still have room to grow?
Absolutely. We're 93% free and reduced lunch. Yes, our students have room to grow. But the things that we're doing every day with them are showing that they are growing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've never taken Acuity before. That's just our school story. And neither has Master Academy. And this year, that's definitely helping us to see how far away from the mark we are. Mm-hmm. And we have a new accountability system that was just implemented last year. So it's not just proficiency anymore. So we're trying to change with the state as they make the changes and trying to make sure that we're meeting the mark with our kids. But we definitely agree that we are doing the best things for students, and our parents would also agree. So all of them choose us for a reason. So
we're talking about charter schools in our listening area today, specifically those that may be in danger of being shut down. We just heard last month that Ball State University would act to revoke charters for several schools across the state. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment for Kyle Stokes or Rochelle Spearman, give us a call. Share your thoughts. 260-452-1185. Toll free at 800-471-9264. Let's open the phones and go to a caller on the line. We've got Daniel. Daniel, welcome to Midday Matters.
Yes, thank you. So I was online trying to understand some of the assessment tools and goals, and I also have a bit of a story that will preface my question. I saw in the assessment such things as English and reading and algebra, mathematics. So those seem to be knowledge creating and evaluation analytical tools, but I also saw one component for biology. And the story that I have is that I started in the natural sciences in undergrad, but I became disillusioned with them, especially after taking a philosophy of science class, to where I began to learn weaknesses in a variety of scientific theories that are the, what they say, the consensus of the scientific community at the time. So seeing as we have, like, Dennis Cruz, the local District 14 representative who's been in the news with the possibility of teaching different perspectives that are out there, the question that I have about the charter schools is, does that part on having the table open to the variety of ideas, is that something that is desired by the charter schools, or are they looking more to teach for the test on the perspective presented in the I-STEP biology component? And I at least have heard vouchers for students to go to different schools, and maybe I'm getting confused between different types of charter schools or where the vouchers allow kids to go, but does that kind of make sense in where I'm asking about whether it's the analytical tools or the exact content of specific disciplines that's being examined? Does that make sense, or should I clarify more?
Daniel, if I may, I mean, it sounds like you might be referring to some legislation we've heard about over the past few years, talking about teaching creationism or other things.
Intelligent design. Yeah, a variety of things like that. So, yeah, I wasn't sure how that fit in with Ball State and the state goals and such like that in the charter schools. So.
Well, let me put this to Rochelle Spearman. Ms. Spearman, charter schools have freedom to either be more specific in some of the kind of things that they teach in terms of maybe specializing in technology, math, science, that sort of thing, or charters can also I think we're crossing our wires just a little bit with the voucher and the charter system. Could you help us clarify just a little bit?
Sure. You can definitely have theme schools in terms of a charter, and those focal points can be the decision of the authorizer if they say yes to that school or not. The state holds us accountable to the standards, and so no matter what the themes are, we have to ensure that students are learning specific standards. I don't know what direction Ball State is wanting to go in terms of wanting to have more theme schools that are built more around science or any other areas. I guess it would just be based on what people are presenting to them and if they feel that children can be successful with that. So I don't know that I have a complete answer for that question. Mm-hmm. In terms of vouchers, families in the community have an opportunity to get vouchers if their children are in fact attending schools that are not performing, and vouchers allow the monies that are with that student to follow them to other private schools or other places that may have tuition, so or maybe other schools that are doing well that it may be in their district. Mm-hmm. So
but no matter the theme of the school, there are certain sets of standards that
to adhere to the state standards no matter what. So
Daniel, we appreciate your call. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, bye-bye. 260-452-1185 is our local line if you'd like to get in touch with us this hour, or you can call us toll-free at 800-471-9264. Kyle Stokes, could you just add to this discussion a little bit? I know a lot of folks have confusion about charter schools and the voucher program, in part because they kind of came up together.
Yeah, I think they are often confused because their outcome is the same, right? It usually involves a student. I mean, I don't want to characterize and say usually, but the typical picture that you paint involving it is a student leaves a traditional public school for another, what we call a choice school. And so you would leave the traditional public school and go to a charter school, or you would go to a private school with the help of a state-issued voucher. All of it sort of issued with the same goal in mind, and that's that you hear people who advocate for school choice say we need to break the monopoly of the public schools, in that the public schools are the assumption goes is that public schools have been underperforming for years, and obviously that's sort of a controversial assertion, but that essentially we need to provide other options and somehow kind of use choice as a mechanism to raise the tide of academic quality across the board. The principle, and I think this sort of goes back to what was at the heart of Daniel's question, is that the mechanism for doing all of this is accountability. It's using testing, statewide standardized testing, to figure out what is academic quality and which choices are the best for parents and students to use. I think the most interesting thing that's come out of this is that there are researchers who tell me all the time there is no research to back up that choice necessarily means that parents are picking the better school to go to. So it's interesting how there is something in the middle of Daniel's question that is at the heart of both the charter question and the question of vouchers is about quality and whether or not you're actually getting more for a student switching school contexts. I think there are a lot of people who advocate for traditional public schools who would say they disagree. But I think charter advocates are very insistent upon the fact that there are students who need these options now, and we must do everything we can to make it available rather than hope that someday public schools turn it around, I guess the line goes.
Mm. Bob Gaylor.
This is a question for Kyle and Rochelle both. Do you, either one of you, get the idea that Ball State is developing or aspiring to develop a number of years in which a number of years they'll give a charter school to prove itself?
Maybe, Bob, do you mean how many years that the charters are being issued for, or I'm not sure I grasp.
Yeah, do you feel like Ball State is coming to the point where they may say 3 years is long enough to decide, or 5 years is long enough? If you can't do what we deem to be a good job educating students in that length of time, we're not going to renew your charter.
Right. Actually, there's a school of thought that says that you know right away, and often the charter schools that do not perform initially within their first year or two, really, are not going to necessarily turn it around. What we saw were 5-year contract renewals for four of the schools available, and 3-year contract extensions available. But those shorter contracts came with performance conditions on those. Those were among the schools that were renewed in the batch of 20 that they were reviewing. And I think that 3 years definitely kind of reflects, we think that you should be showing gains right away. And that is, as I understand, a bit of a shortening of the window, because I think there were some schools that were on 7-year contracts, which you run by charter school watchers, and they would say that's ridiculous. That's way too long a time to have a charter school operating without the opportunity for reauthorization or revoking their charter, shutting them down. But I think that is, again, it's one of these weird points where charter school advocates and people like Ms. Spearman that I've talked to over the past couple of weeks here, where their views on this radically diverge. There are advocates who say we need to see gains now. We should expect and are right in expecting gains now, versus people like Ms. Spearman, and again, as I said before, people over at Timothy L. Johnson Academy, also in Fort Wayne and other schools across the state, who say we need time with these kids because these are students who don't perform and have been kind of felt marginalized in traditional settings. We need time. So again, it's very, very fundamental divergence of views on this question.
We have a few callers on the line, and we have a break to get to in just a moment. But Rochelle Spearman, I'd like to give you a chance to respond as well.
Well, I definitely agree with those 3 extensions. It's definitely saying you need to perform within those 3 years or else. But even with the 5 years that were granted to us starting out, I think that was maybe the thought behind it as well from Ball State, assuming that we would meet the goals, academic goals desired in that 5-year time frame. So that's why we're here. So
let's open the phones before we have to get to our break here and bring Mike in on the conversation. Mike, welcome to Midday Matters.
Yeah, thank you. Let me give you my bias up front. I'm married to a public school teacher. And with all due respect to Ms. Spearman, and I mean that sincerely, this argument about it takes longer for these kids to show gains because the level at which they come in, that's what public schools have been saying for years, and no one seemed to pay any attention to that. So suddenly you've got this reaction to underperforming schools, which, again, it's looking at the kids most difficult and saying, you're not doing a good enough job. They go to charter schools, and charter schools are saying, hey, wait, these kids need a whole lot of work. Well, that's the argument that public schools have been making all along, and I'm not sure why that should hold up for a charter school.
Rochelle Spearman.
Definitely, you raise a good point. I've never been in the traditional schools other than attending them, Fort Wayne community in the area. Have only great things to say. I'm not one that holds the view that because you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, we exist. I just don't believe it's a one-size-fits-all mentality or model for students and for parents that are making the choices. So, yes, I can't argue with what you're raising, but I will say this. I know the story for the students that we serve, and I can absolutely raise that as being one of the reasons that maybe we haven't met our goals yet. Not an excuse, but it's just a reality when you look at the different situations. So, yes, maybe Fort Wayne Community and other public schools have also been saying that, and I've never been one to dispute that, and maybe overall the, you know, whole charter movement and the argument is to say that we can do this faster, and we also understand that. So it's turned out a little different for us specifically. I'm speaking for Imagine Schools on Broadway, so.
I think the point, and I hope others are as perceptive as you are, that it's a lot more difficult than it looks from the outside.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mike, a good insight. We appreciate your call.
Yeah,
thank you. All right. Bye-bye. 260-452-1185 or toll free at 800-471-9264. Kyle Stokes, before we go to break here, just 60 seconds. This isn't an argument that's new to folks like you covering this beat.
No, absolutely. In fact, I just got a tweet while we were talking here that from someone who's a teacher in Martinsville down closer to me, and said, if charter schools are the answer, why are there so many questions about their performance and closures? And I think that this goes back to, again, what we were talking about choice, is that at the end of the day, charter schools do take money out of the traditional public schools. They take it out of the traditional public school formula. The question is it worth it? And I think that I'm hearing from a lot of public school educators who are saying, yeah, I mean, these questions about performance are absolutely fair given the financial implications of these decisions.
We do need to take a break here. We'll continue the discussion when we get back. In the meantime, we want to hear from you. 260-452-1185 or 800-471-9264. You can always email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or send us a tweet at Midday Matters. When we return, we'll have a comment from Fred. Fred, I hope you'll stay with us. In the meantime, this is Midday Matters.
The Supreme Court will soon consider challenges to the Voting Rights Act, born out of the civil rights movement of the 1960s. That law binds some southern states to federal supervision.
Every single minute change, we have to go all the way through the Justice Department, which penalizes us for conduct now that doesn't exist in Shelby County.
That story later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's weekdays starting at 4 on WBOI Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio. I'm Sarah D'Elia with WBOI News. Indiana's highest performing schools would be freed from several state regulations under legislation headed to the Indiana House. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports.
Carmel Republican Senator Mike Delf's legislation grew out of schools in his district asking for greater flexibility from the state. Delf says his bill is all about rewarding the state's highest performing school districts with more freedom.
Freedom over their curriculum, freedom over get academically gifted students and programs, freedom over vocational education and training.
Bloomington Democratic Senator Mark Stoops, who voted against Delf's bill, says he's in favor of the concept of rewarding high-performing schools, but fears what Delf's idea might lead to.
I'm just concerned that's going to lead to the next level of funding only being focused on those high-performing schools at the expense of lower-performing schools that might need more focused funding.
Governor Mike Pence's proposed budget includes a performance-based education funding increase in its second year. Delf says his bill has nothing to do with school funding. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith.
An analysis by a Fort Wayne newspaper finds that the state agency charged with keeping Indiana workplaces safe is doing it with fewer inspectors and fines below the national average. The Journal-Gazette reports that the Indiana Occupational Safety and Health Administration has struggled with employee turnover and some recent high-profile cases. IOSHA conducts surprise inspections to make sure workplace safety laws are being enforced. IOSHA also responds to workplace complaints and follows up on fatalities and serious injuries at workplaces. According to computerized Occupational Safety and Health Administration data, there was a distinct drop in IOSHA inspections in the early 1990s. The newspaper also found that fines for serious violations in Indiana averaged less than half the national rate. IOSHA officials say they'd rather see businesses change than hand out fines. A Purdue University-based state office is reaching out to Indiana's farmers to educate them about new restrictions on using manure to fertilize cropland. The rules written by the Office of the Indiana State Chemist are designed to protect the environment and prevent fish kills by restricting where manure can be applied. Office Fertilizer Administrator Matt Pearson has spent the past year traveling the state and explaining the rules to farmers. He says that 15,000 private manure applicators and dealers most likely know about the new rules. But Pearson says some 30,000 to 40,000 Indiana farmers may not know about the regulations, which include documenting the volume and location where manure is applied and applying it specific distances from wells and streams to prevent contamination. You're listening to 89.1 FM WBOY Fort Wayne. I'm Sarah D'Elia, and now back to Midday Matters with your host, Sean Beter.
It's about 10 minutes before the top of the hour, 1 o'clock. This is Midday Matters on WBOI. I'm Sean Beter, along with Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. And this hour, we're talking about charter schools in Indiana, specifically after hearing the news that Ball State is set to revoke the charters of several schools around the state of Indiana, including a few in Fort Wayne. Joining us by phone for the hour, it's Kyle Stokes, our State Impact Indiana reporter, covering education. With us in studio, Rochelle Spearman, principal at Imagine Schools on Broadway. Principal Spearman, one of the schools who have become part of this story.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, please.
Just wanted to respond, Kyle, to the tweet you said you received from someone in Martinsville, I believe. I can't. And you said she... said if we're the answer, why are there so many, you know, questions running around? And I, you know, can't speak for everyone that's involved in the charter school world, but I can say this. Again, it goes back to I don't believe there's one school district or one school that is a fit for everyone. But I do believe we're the answer for the parents that choose to bring their kids to us. And we can break down specific stories of why. When you look at the financial impact and when you look at it at a broader as a broader picture, I definitely understand the question of if you're not performing better right away, why are we wasting our funds as a state on charter schools? And I would just say to that, you have some schools that have the essentials of becoming a great school and you have some that don't. And absolutely, they should be closed down. I don't feel that's the case for our school specifically. So that's just a short response to her tweet. So
I want to bring a few callers in on the conversation here. Let's open the phones. Excuse me. It looks like we have Fred on the line. Fred, welcome to Midday Matters.
Greetings. First, I'd like to respond to Daniel's comment. evolution is science. Other theories, like those that Dennis Kruse is trying to promote, are religion. Many religious schools do mix the two, but they have to test on the science of evolution. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that's just resolved. It's constitutional, and that question is pretty much ended, except for those proponents of the religious theories. Now, Benning mentioned that if parents want to send their kids to schools that teach the faith as evolution, then they may do so. But it is counter to what he formally said in terms of the reasons for the charter schools. Mm-hmm. Second, and most important, the child's performance is largely driven by parents. The original voucher charter concept was to give poor kids' parents options outside the public schools. Now, the most recent Tea Party proposal that both the governor and Benning have proposed takes the income level to $126,000 a year and proposes $6,500 cap for charter schools. In other words, I think we're moving to a Tea Party concept here in Indiana, and I think that ought to be stopped, and I hope the Senate does so.
Fred,
any situation that gives parents choices is good. The idea of recognizing poor parents best. Now, all I'm saying is,
if I can,
public schools.
I'm sorry.
Have
if,
been,
I can, if I
Fred, yeah, Fred yeah. Hold on one moment. Kyle Stokes wants to jump in here.
Yeah. Let me jump in and just on the bill, the proposal that Boehning has brought forth in terms of expanding the voucher program. My understanding is that it isn't that the income levels that are necessary to get into the program have been raised up to $126,000. My understanding is that the initial requirement for income has not changed. You still have to be making, I believe, at 150 or 160% of the poverty line, or 150% of free and reduced price lunch. It's still targeted towards low-income students, but there is what Fred is referring to is a limit that basically makes it harder to phase out of the program. If you get into the voucher program and then you get a raise, it makes it harder for them to take away your voucher if your income goes up. That's what that $126,000 limit is all about. I think it's important to clarify
well,
that.
The original proposal was $124,000.
And
apparently the committee
that's
has
my understanding
changed
too,
that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Finally, you know, the problem that I have with people raising hell about Ball State's action is that they are actually now doing their job. The problem that I have with the current discussion is that the charter school board, which is a new board chartering a whole bunch of schools, does not appear to have any essence of accountability that Ball State, for instance, is finally tracking. And the anger that I have is that the charter school groups and their supporters, especially Tea Party, do not want their group to be accountable.
Fred, a whole lot of points in that. Really, let's put it to our panelists to respond here. Rochelle Spearman.
Well, I will say this. The statement, Ball State is finally doing their jobs. They are definitely attempting to hold their schools more accountable. We are not trying to escape accountability by any means. We are just asking and appealing so that they consider our entire school and not just consider test scores, because at the end of the day, for our schools here in Fort Wayne, that's what it's boiling down to. And so we definitely want them to consider the whole child as we do. Again, you go back to certain schools may not have the essentials in place to becoming a great school. We believe in Fort Wayne for Imagine that we do have the essentials in place, and we just need this year's data to be considered, which is the fifth year of our charter. So,
all right, I'm sorry, we have several more callers on the line. We have to let you go for now.
That's fine. Thanks.
All right, thank you very much for the call. Just about 4 minutes left in the program here. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. I believe we have Sean. Sean, are you with us?
Hi. Good afternoon.
Welcome to the program.
Interesting discussion as always regarding this topic. I'd like to highlight a couple of things.
Sure. Very briefly, if you could, please.
Sure. Discipline and lack of it in both public and private schools, and the school's inability or hands tied inability, hands tied, meaning they can't do much about discipline. So you have one child or two children that disrupt the whole class, and the teacher, both in public and probably in the charters, have a big issue with trying to maintain a learning environment for the balance of the children. And then the second thing is, what happened to the value of education as a means of up and out? And that's underlying. When you look at the poor side of things, I mean the underprivileged, there always has been an attitude of using education as a means to advance oneself, and I think that that's disappeared in today's modern world, unfortunately. Always in the comments.
Sean, we appreciate the call. We'll put that to the panel. Rochelle Spearman, let's start with you. A couple of big points there. Is it difficult in a charter environment like imagine Broadway, mm-hmm. let's say, to keep that environment stable, to keep teachers in control?
Well, within our environment specifically, we have a dean of discipline that kind of helps stabilize us in that sense. There are a lot of factors that come into play. Kids are coming to school with a lot of different things going on, and sometimes learning is the last thing on their mind, and we have to pay attention to those other factors before we can get them to a place where they can be in the classroom without being a disruption or distraction to other learners. So yes, I agree that is a challenge, but it's something that we are definitely maintaining. And yes, that's a school issue, not just a charter or public school issue. So that's something that across the state we're trying to get under control, so kids can have the best learning environment possible.
Briefly, the caller touches on the achievement gap, and I think that there are interesting arguments to be had about whether or not education is, in fact, the great equalizer of our society and whether that should be the role, and that's a huge conversation. I should just say that is the focus of the test-focused environment in which our schools are operating, charter, private, and traditional public. The idea that we need to close the achievement gap between low and high socioeconomic groups is, I think, a very central vein in all of this. And if that's not getting through, I think that says something about what the policy is being framed as or marketed as, if that's not something that's resonating. But that's been the pitch points from everybody from George Bush to Tony Bennett to President Obama in a lot of ways.
We have time for just one more comment here. I'm going to Facebook. I have a comment from Monette. I'll try to summarize just a bit here. Monette says, in 2009, Imagine Schools on Broadway fired their principal when parents objected. They were told their opinion did not matter. Now they want parents to speak up in their appeal to BSU for renewal of that charter. The whole issue is driven by profits of Imagine Schools. The second point she makes, support test scores were the reason for charter schools being allowed into Indiana. Now charters are pleading with us not to look at their test scores. Rochelle Spearman, I would imagine you'd disagree. We just have a few seconds left in the program.
Yes. Like I said, I've been with the school since we opened. Our first principal transitioned to Master Academy. Then our next principal transitioned also. And then I'm here, so that first comment is not true. And no, we are not pleading to keep us open and not hold us accountable for our test scores. So,
all right. We have to leave the conversation there today. Monette, thank you very much for your comment. Thanks to everybody who called in and shared their thoughts with us today. Thanks very much to you, Kyle Stokes, our State Impact Indiana reporter, and to Rochelle Spearman as well. Thanks, Bob Kaler. I'm Sean Beter. This is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios at 89.1 HD Channel 1, streaming online at nipr.fm. This is WBOI Fort Wayne and WBKE North Manchester, a service of Manchester University. The time is 1 o'clock. Have a great day.